So this, if I remember right, it was about $600,000 they spent on doing it up for him.
Were you involved in any of the garden work for that?
No, not that one. No, just number one and two. Mm. But maybe I'll tell you off camera the name of the other person. They were all interesting jobs, and the builders, Bellevard Construction, they were fantastic at restoration. Bellevard Construction, they're in Manuka. They were terrific, the people to work with, absolutely fantastic.
You mentioned the Australian Heritage Commission. Did you do much? Was there many jobs that overlapped?
No, that was the only job I did with them.
Did you know people like Max Burke or David Yankin?
Max Burke, he gave a talk to the Horticultural Society. I arranged for him to give a talk not that long ago.
About what topic?
Well, I wasn't there at the time, but I can't remember, because I arranged all the speakers for the Horticultural Society for quite a number of years. But I think I was overseas at the time that he...
You mentioned earlier that you gave talks when you were in Yass. What sort of things do you speak about?
For instance, when I was doing the fuchsias, I was giving talks at conferences, garden conferences in Sydney, Bateman's Bay, wherever, and specifically talking about fuchsias. And I think I gave talks actually at the Australian Garden History Society at some stage. But also the... not only garden clubs, but I was giving talks to like people like Rotary, other organisations.
Do you enjoy giving those?
Probus. Oh, yes. As I say, I got four talks. Well, talk next week is to Women's Division of Legacy. I'm giving a talk next week to them. And then
what's your topic then?
Well, it'll be just a general, because basically it's as far as I know, a lot of retired people, but it'll be a general, almost a question and answer session. But I'll give them little hints, because one thing I do promote in gardening is totally organic. All the chemicals, fertilizers, everything, they have to be certified organic. And in my garden page, it's all certified organic to comply with the Australian standard, which is AS6000, covering organic and biodynamic products. And it covers everything from foodstuffs to chemicals to sprays and so on.
How long have you been organic?
Oh, since we had the nursery in Yass and herbs.
Was that ahead of your time at that point?
Oh, well, it still is, because the big controversy at the moment is with Roundup or glyphosate, which is another big hand down on it.
$3 billion.
Yes, and I wrote in the City News about this, and one organisation in Canberra, Farmers Organisation, the lobby group, took exception to this, and they started legal proceedings saying there's nothing wrong with glyphosate, and it can be used so safely, and there's no countries ever banned it. Technically speaking, no country as a whole had banned it totally at that time. But since then, and in the last few weeks, like Vietnam, have banned it totally, because they claim, as said, science people, and a possibility of cancer, as it came out in the courts in America. And the first case in America came up in a state jurisdiction, but this one was a federal, and there's listed at the moment 12,500 cases in the federal court in America against Monsanto.
Wow.
Monsanto has since been bought out by Bayer in Germany, of which they paid, I think, $65 billion or something like this for it. coincidentally a cousin of mine in England, not in the nursery industry, but he worked with Bayer for about 25 years. But simple things like snail bait, and it's only just come out now, any snail bait with the chemical metaldehyde in it is fatal to dogs and animals and so on. And they've now banned it. But, for example, Ganina wanted for her wedding present only a golden cocker spaniel dog. I bought her a beautiful pedigree golden cocker spaniel dog, which we had for quite a number of years. Oh, well, let me see, that was when before the children were born, and they were about 10, I think, when I killed it. And I was using, and I don't mind mentioning the name, I was using Defender snail bait, which is the green one. And I was in the garden, and I must have put the packet down, gone to the phone, whatever, can't remember. But came back, and the dog was turning funny, raced it to the vet. He said, sorry, it's just like rat poison, coagulates the blood, nothing I can do. So then I went to a Bayer product called Basol, which is blue pellets. Do you have a garden, by the way?
Yes.
Right. And I tried killing the next dog when we were living here. But the vet's only a few hundred yards down the road, raced down, he gave it an injection, and it brought everything up and saved the dog. But it's now said, in Australia, we are very much behind overseas on like Carbaryl for coddling moth.
What do you use now for your snails?
We use a product by Multicrop, which make also seaweed products. And they have a snail bait that's an iron-based, because people forget not only dogs, and not necessarily cats. Cats don't seem to worry about these poisons, but things like blue-tongued lizards and so on. And so in my garden page and in my talks, I present a variety of products that are certified organic. Maxicrop seaweed, Neutrox humongous, that these comply with as certified organic. And I've done that for a long time.
We've just had a small break. I'd just like you to tell me something about your own garden and your plans here.
When we came here, and the house was built in 1964, it was one of the first houses in this suburb of Watson, which was developed because this area was the experimental farm for the CSIRO. And it was all like wheat crops and so on growing here for about 60, 70 years. And then the government resumed it in about 1960 and 1964, that was fairly well established, and this was a fairly standard sort of home at the time. The important thing is with the garden, the same as a repeat of in Yass on a mini scale, was if I was designing gardens, I had to have a garden that looked pretty good. Because if people came and looked at the garden here and thought, oh my God, you know, we've got the wrong person here. But if the people came to the garden and walked out the bank and said, oh, wow, look at this, I'd got them. I'd got them. Hook, line, and sinker. I'd got them. And so initially I based the garden on the layout of the early plans of Walter Burley Griffin, with a central spot, which was a water feature, which unfortunately during the drought we had to abandon in the 2000s. And time, but everything radiated out from a centre point because Canberra is renowned for its roundabouts in the older parts of Canberra, certainly. And so everything radiated out, so the paths are not square, they all go out at an angle, and the hedges go round in circles, just like the, and I've got a picture there somewhere, of the early plan, or the first plan I had of the garden, which showed it based on Burley Griffin. But right from the day one, it had to be more or less a wow factor in, like you looked at the back hedge and saying, gosh, look at the camellia hedge, you know, 3 meters tall. And so that was the basis of the garden. And also, basically, it was an English-style garden. Say, when we came here, it was non-existent, the garden, front and back. It was a couple of shrubs, but nothing there at all, really. And we came here 91. We came here and started establishing the garden. And interesting things, like you commented on the front hedge. Everybody has hedges all going square, square. Ours graduates from about 1.5 meters tall up to nearly 3 meters tall in a big curve around the front garden. Doubly in that where it curves the high part is where the neighbours are, so it gives a sense of privacy both to them and for us.
Because otherwise you have these, I notice these small low fences just a few centimetres high.
Well, here...
At the front, between the houses.
Oh,
small,
yeah.
Brick fence.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, that, well, here there's a little brick wall that actually belongs to the next door neighbours, although we keep it painted and maintained. But because we've got 3 neighbours around us that are not gardeners in any shape or form.
And they haven't picked up any hints over the last two decades?
No.
You also have a collection of Daphne.
Yeah, well, I love Daphnes. I don't know why I started this Daphnes, but certainly between myself and a couple of other members of the Horticultural Society, we're almost competing. And there was a very well-known Daphne, or specialising in Daphnes, at Mount Wilson in the Blue Mountains.
Who ran that, do you recall?
Mary Garth was the name of the place. And the Raines family, R-A-I-N-E-S, Raines family, ran that. And they had dozens of different varieties of Daphnes. Unfortunately, Mrs. Raines, she died, and he is in a retirement village. But their daughter, whom I spoke to, she works with the New South Wales Conservation Department, something like that. At any rate, she's tried to keep it going. But... at the moment, as I say, there's a definitive work on Daphnes by an English fellow that specialised in growing them in the south of England, and that has listed 200 varieties of Daphnes. I've only got about 22 at the moment, although I lost one recently. But and they flower, because most people think Daphnes as the common Daphne, Daphne odora, from China, but most of the Daphnes, and you can tell straight away by the tiny leaves, like when you were looking at down the back there, are from Italy, for example.
What was the name of that one that particularly caught my eye?
And that was Eternal Fragrance, Daphne Eternal Fragrance. And that was developed in England, but also promoted by plant growers, Australia and Victoria, plant growers would be one of the biggest wholesale nurseries, and particularly of perennials. They supply garden centres all over, but their quality is excellent. Interestingly, one of the present owners, when we had our nursery in Yass, he was the truck driver delivering plants. He now owns the nursery. I think they said it's about 1.5-2 million plants a year they turn out at their nursery in Victoria. But a very, very good standard. I can't overemphasise the standard of their plants. But they were promoting some of the Daphnes. But the small leaves, anything with the small leaf, like rosemary, those sorts of things, you'll know they come, or grey or silver leaves, they come from a hot climate. But one or two plants we brought from Yass, the nursery. One plant I'll mention in particular was a chance seedling, because with any plant, if you take it from a cutting, it's exactly the same or cloned like the parent plant. If you take it from a seed, and say if it's a pink camellia, the seed grows, it could turn out as a white one or a red one or any colour under the sun. But we had a seedling grew, and I brought it from Yes and planted it in the garden here. And we had an expert on camellias giving a talk to the Horticultural Society. He came from Leeton. And he was giving a talk. Coincidentally, it was winter time, and so I took some flowers of this particular camellia, and I said, right, okay, could you help me and tell me what it is? And he looked at it and looked at the leaves and said, well, can I come and have a look in your garden? So he came over the next day, had a look, and he said, right. He said, what is it? Because I don't know it. And I said, well, you're the expert. It's part of the International Garden Society, Camellia Society. He said, I don't know it. And I said, well, I thought you'd be able to tell me. He said, no. And so he brought a couple of other experts, camellias, over. And he said, right, okay. He said, try taking some cuttings. And he said, I want to take photos of this and record it. And so for the next 2.5 years, literally, they took pictures of the leaves, of the shape of the flowers, the design of the bush, etc., etc. At the end of it, he said, look, this is a new variety of camellia. And he said, it's now registered worldwide, and you as the breeder, what are you going to call it? And I said, well, I'm going to call it Camellia Priscilla Rose, after my sister, who died of cancer in 2008. And he said, right, so the first thing, he said, we need to take the quantity cuttings to make sure they're all uniform. So we took 100 cuttings, and I had a grower just out of Canberra who has a wholesale nursery. He used to be the chief plant propagator at the Botanic Gardens, but he's got his own business. And out of the 100, 75 took, and they all came out true to form. So he said, it's totally registered. It's registered as Camellia Priscilla Rose.
Is it appropriate to put on tape the name of the man who helped you with the propagation and grew them?
Oh, the nursery? Yeah, Peter Ollerenshaw at Wamboyne, just down in Canberra. He's very well known for developing one of his Corias, Coria Canberra Gem, was developed specially for the centenary of Canberra.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Peter is, Jennifer, his wife, they're lovely, lovely people. And Daphne that died, before it died, fortunately, we got some cuttings off it, and he's propagated that to keep that going. It's a brilliant Daphne.
How do you feel about this very special camellia?
Well, what we did was we decided to sell them, and the funds from them, after I paid Peter for the propagation side of things, there was still about $10 left over each plant, and we sold them. With the money went to the Kids with Cancer Foundation at Westmead Hospital in Sydney. And so the next batch, we took 200, and we sold virtually all of those. But because it takes, from the time you take the cutting till they're big enough for sale, it's really about 4 to 5 years. Mm. By that time, I'll be 85. So, and I won't be really being able to look after several hundred camellias in the garden. So we've actually stopped production, but I've got one put aside for you to take back to Sydney. Oh. Along with the story.
Well, that's lovely. It. Thank you.
So, but that's one of the pride and joys of our garden. And people that have bought the little ones from me have come back to the garden club and said, oh yes, and they're covered in buds and they're just about to come out in flower, which they are at the moment, because they flower in winter. And this is the beauty of the camellias. For instance, my camellia hedge at the back flowers in winter, and also it brings in the honey eaters.
Because
they love the nectar of camellias. So basically the garden is a display garden, and I still have groups. We had the Geranium and Fuchsia Society, came here a few weeks ago, and that afternoon tea in the garden and chatted and all brought their chairs and here for several hours, relaxing day, and so on. But I don't open it to the general public. Well, it used to be under the old Australian Open Garden Scheme, but that collapsed, unfortunately, and that doesn't exist. although there's a mini group in Canberra have gardens open, but generally, but we used to regularly, we'd have 1,000, 1,500 people through the garden of a weekend. I think the first time we opened, we had 1,800 through. One weekend, it poured with rain, and midwinter, we decided to open in June. People could look at a winter garden, poured with rain, and they came with the gumboots and umbrellas, and we still had 600 through. And we donated to the Red Cross, whoever, different organisations.
So why is there such an enthusiasm in Canberra for gardens?
Well, really, you'll be surprised at this comment, but there really isn't.
There isn't?
No. Really, there's not many gardens in Canberra.
But not so much the gardens which are opened, but the fact that people want to go and look at a garden or want to buy a plant.
Yes.
The fact that there's this list this list that you belong to, this of like seven or nine...
Yeah, but they're mainly specialists, they're general garden clubs. But even those are now struggling to get people to go on the committee, are struggling.
Why is that?
And, well, people don't have time. Young people, they've got their four-wheel drives and two four-wheel drives in the family because they think that's it. You only need to look at any coffee shop in Canberra, and particularly Saturday or Sunday, and they're there with great mountains of food on their breakfasts and that sort of thing. And then they're off because the kids are playing football or cricket or whatever. And they don't seem to... They've got so many activities. Besides, they're so busy looking at their mobile phones.
This is a topic I think we could spend a long time on.
So I think we'll leave that. But really speaking... It's not the same as in the early days of Canberra as far as gardening goes.
Just darting around, Cedric, going back to the camellias, I know the Australian Garden History Society in Sydney's about to have, or just recently had, Stephen Utick talk about camellias. And of course there was Peter Valder with the beautiful garden at Mount Wilson.
That's right, yes.
Are those people, have they been an influence or assisted you in some way?
No. Certainly not Utick, Stephen. I've known him for a while. But Peter Valder, I've always had a great... Stop.
We're going to pause a moment. Peter Valder.
Peter Valder, one of his best books is The Garden Plants of China. Excellent book. And it's a book I refer to. And I've known Peter Valder and I've been to his place in the Blue Mountains, etc., although he hasn't been there for quite a number of years. But people like that, they've done so much for horticulture that they really have, and certainly influenced by him. Another person was Marilyn Abbott at Kennerton Green in Mittagong, and I just loved her garden. And Marilyn is a real character. She was the general manager of the Sydney Opera House, something like that. And she had a magnificent garden at Kennerton Green. Interestingly enough, she ran garden courses, and on two occasions had John Brooks from England came out.
Oh, did she?
To run classes there.
Did you attend those?
No, because I was familiar with his... I mean, I went up there, I got photos of him and Marilyn and myself and so on. But basically, he was talking more in general rather than specific designing gardens.
Hmm. Just, I don't want to go back too far again, but just touching on John Brooks, as you were talking about him... I wonder, Cedric, I'm not quite sure how to sort of word this, but you designed gardens before you and worked in nurseries before you went to his course, so...
No, not really, no. Now, I was giving advice on gardens,
okay,
but not specifically designing gardens,
okay,
before I went on his course. So I was giving general advice and saying, well, you could put a rose garden there,
right,
is that the other, but not specifically designing gardens as such.
So he gave you, I'm guessing, presuming here, a particular element of confidence about doing that.
He gave me the entree into a new business and a new way of life, which lasted from 1988 when I went to his course up until last July 2018 when I turned 79 and thought, oh, I might not be really wandering around up and down, particularly as I said to you, I had a new hip and a new knee, and trying to clamber around gardens and measuring gardens.
30 years.
I decided to, except for garden talks and that sort of thing, basically retire.
And again, just finishing that thread with John Brooks, you showed me in your studio the beautiful drawing of the Times garden.
Yeah, Canberra Times, yeah.
Canberra Times. Could you tell me that's a design in diamonds? It's a very restricted space. Could you just tell me something about your design and the genesis of that garden?
Well, it was after they built a new building, and so there was a U-shaped space in between the buildings. It was very long and narrow, and it wouldn't have looked right with these buildings and the way they were designed to have circular garden beds and so on. And so it's like diamonds, like on a pack of cards, a set of diamonds interwoven with box hedges through the garden with several water peaches and then some trees, groups of trees, to give a bit of height.
Which trees? What kind?
One part we use conifers to screen off an ugly part of a building. But lots and lots of things like daphnes, those sorts of things, fragrant plants. And there was two small gazebos we built because the Canberra Times, like any newspaper, runs 24 hours a day. And staff that were working at night, and if it was a warm summer's evening, they could go outside and smoke. Or eat their meal or have a cup of coffee and sit outside. And so, and then with a particular statue. It's a long, narrow garden, but it suited that with the diamond shape outline with the box hedging, small areas of lawn, because you're dictated by the building and the shape of the building with any garden, really. And you'll know if the people really are gardeners and if they're interested in gardening or they just want a garden for effect. Because I had, the other millionaire.
Fairfax?
No, the other millionaire that's he's just involved with his casinos.
Packer.
Packer, was it Packer?
Stokes?
No, Kerry Stokes, he owned the Canberra Times when I did the gardens for him. No, but up at Red Hill in Canberra. We laid out the garden, but they said he doesn't do anything in the garden. No, it wasn't him, it was somebody else. But when we just about finished the garden, we were planting some silver birches. And he said, right, I want to be involved in this, planting the silver birch. Right, so he dug the hole and we supervised, he planted the silver birch, that was it. And we said, but you don't have anything to do with the garden. And he has gardeners come in to do every aspect of the garden, from the pruning to this, that and the other. But when he had a group there, they said, oh, your garden, because he'd opened it to the public, for charities, they said, oh, your garden is magnificent. He said, oh, yes, he said, I'll tell you what. And when I was planting that silver birch, he said, oh, the ground was so hard. Gave the impression that he did the whole garden. But some of them didn't do anything in the garden. But most of the gardens, 99% of them, the people were gardeners that I designed gardens for. And recognising the value of garden clubs, and say the Australian Garden History Society, because it's so important to recognise and preserve lots of the aspects of historic gardens. I mean, really, really is. Certainly you get that in Britain. And fortunately in Britain, they have the National Lottery Fund.
Mm.
There's only one lottery in England, or no, two, National Lottery and the National Heritage Lottery Fund. And anybody can apply if you want a new roof on your church roof, or you want some tennis courts or whatever, you can apply to the lottery fund.
Mm.
And the promoters, they only keep 3% of the money coming in, and the rest is goes out to the community. And it's billions.
Yes. I mean,
it's enormous.
Yes.
The first prize is usually about £40 million.
Before we get lost in envy of such wealth and prosperity for gardens, I wanted to return to your garden writing as well.
Right. Well, I started off writing for the Canberra Times, or an offshoot was the Canberra Chronicle initially, which was a free newspaper, and that was in 1986. But then after a short time, they said, would you write for the Canberra Times?
How did that itself begin in 86?
Oh, I went along to them and I said, you need a garden page.
Did you?
And they said, oh, really? I said, yes. And we were still in Yass at that time with the nursery. And I said, I'll write about our garden. And we started off writing about, let's go for a walk through the garden, see what's in flower. And that was the basis of the garden page. And then transferred to the Canberra Times proper. And I was writing from 1986 till 2011.
Every week?
Every week, yeah.
How do you carve out the time for that task?
Oh, well, that doesn't take long.
Or the inspiration?
A couple of hours. Oh, I might be driving down the street somewhere and see a particular plant. I've even knocked on the door and said, excuse me, I don't know that plant. What is it? And they'll tell me. And I'll do a bit of research and say, gosh, I've seen this plant growing in the garden. I know it grows here. And that's the basis for part of the garden page.
Do you have a big following?
Huge! Rosalind. I mean, I can't honestly answer that. But the Canberra Times, 2011, the editor, I don't mind saying this because it's all been in print, I was collecting the mail and he said, oh, Cedric, have you got a minute? And I said, yes. He said, I'm Interchange. He hadn't been there long. In the Canberra Times, we've got to boost sales or whatever. I'm Interchange. So I said, oh, yes, what do you have in mind? So he said, well, firstly, he said, you've been here, what, 23 years? So I'm going to terminate you today. I said, oh, okay, so you're not happy with the garden page? No, no. He said, I'll explain to you. I'm Interchange.
You must have been gutted by that.
And then he said, Karen Middleton, who's the senior political reporter for SBS television, she was writing an article. He said, I don't know if it makes you feel better, but he said, I terminated Karen Middleton last week. Right, okay. So that was it. He said, well, you can finish off this week's column and we'll put it in next week's. But he said, after that, he said, we won't need you any longer.
How did you feel to be told that?
Well, slightly shocked. Slightly shocked. But I discovered later, not long after, because when it changed hands from Kerry Stokes to Rural Press, which was also, was it Fairfax at that time, when they bought it out from Kerry Stokes, Ian Meikle, the name that was the general manager of the Canberra Times, when I did all the gardens, Ian Meikle was the general manager. He then subsequently went, when it changed hands, he went and he joined Pacific Publications in Sydney, who turned out heaps of magazines. Ian literally started in journalism with the Adelaide, whatever it was, when he was a young lad. And the Canberra City News was in existence, but it was struggling. So Ian bought out
the Canberra City News,
and he had heard about me, and also I went to see him and I said, well, you've got no garden page in the Canberra City News. And he said, right. He said, well, okay, so today's Thursday, so if you have a copy on my desk for Monday morning, he said, you'll be the garden writer for the Canberra City News. And that was the start of it.
That was last year?
No, this was in 2011.
2011, yes.
2011.
Yes. And so you really moved from one to the next?
Next. Now, subsequently also, I didn't know that half the contributors, like the social reporter, the arts and entertainment reporter, the advertising manager, had all been terminated by the Canberra Times. And Ian said, I've dealt with you people for years. You know how to write a page about arts and entertainment, this, that and the other. And I didn't realise until we had a meeting, and then suddenly said, oh, you're here as well. Oh, hello. Oh, hello. The whole team had virtually joined Ian Meikle in the Canberra City News. And that's been hugely successful. He's got some very, very good writers in it. It's based on advertising, you know, it's...
But your the ethos of your columns hasn't changed across the
Oh, well, except that in the Canberra Times, at the moment, the present writer has no say on, for example, what photos are used.
Mm.
Hence, I was telling you the story. But,
yes.
But the City News, I write... I put my photos in, and they put them in as I present them, and I have, you know, more or less total control over my garden page each week.
And you must have correspondents who write to you regularly about...
Oh, emails, and my lemon tree, the leaves are turning yellow, what do I do will you come and give a garden talk?
Mm.
So that's been going continuous since 2011, and that's been highly successful. And the magazine, it's both online. The other thing is the Canberra Times would never ever put it on online. So you couldn't look up my garden page, which of course it happens nowadays. But from the start, they had my garden page online. And it's there going right back to 2011. So you can look up spring gardens in 2011, and then you can look at what to do in the spring garden every spring from 2011, so it's round figures 30 years I've been.
It's an extraordinary record.
Garden page each week.
Have you thought of turning that into a book?
Oh, yes, I had Cilla Rosenberg from Victoria Publisher said to me, Cedric, when are you going to put it together? If you just put, even a couple of years.
It'll be a book.
In that.
A fat book.
It's a book already.
Yes.
But, oh, it's time. And
yes.
You can only do so much.
I think that's a fitting lead towards the end of our interview, Cedric. And just before we do wind up, though, is there anything that that you want to talk about that I haven't asked you about in particular?
Oh, not really. I mean, I love the promotion of gardens. From a lifestyle, particularly people that are, I use the word elderly because I'm certainly elderly, but retired, it's so much better if they're in their own homes, they have a garden, rather than seeing people sitting around, and we've had personal friends that have, one lived to be 100 and one 98, but sitting in a nursing home, they're all sitting there in a circle around the room, TV's going, nobody's ever watching it, whatever they might be knitting and so on. Whereas those, and certainly elderly people that I was involved with one lady who say at 92, she still had a big garden growing all her own veggies, didn't believe in heating except for an open wood fire, chopped up her own firewood at 92, she lived to 98. But this is terrific, they're out in the open air, they're getting some exercise, even if they're walking around the garden.
Yes.
And I think that is so important. Quickly, just one classic example was Mole Village, M-O-W-L-E, Mole Village, an Anglican retirement village out near Castle Hill. And when it was put in and the gardens were put in, and lots of the units had their own small gardens, and they said, now, you don't do any gardening because it's dangerous, you could put a fork through your foot, nothing in the gardens, we've got professional gardens that do all that. Well, there was almost open rebellion. In no time at all, now the gardeners come in, mow the big lawns. If somebody wants a bit of help, they help them. But the people, and they give each other cuttings and so on.
Were you involved in those gardens?
No, not at all. But I knew the site and knew the story. And I think that is so important. But also young people now, like for instance Yates, at the moment have a competition going. The schools and organisations can apply for $1,000 grant to, they submit a garden or a school garden, and they can win $1,000 prize. And I think that is great. Trying to encourage the young people. Just up the road here, we have Madura Primary School, and they've got a fantastic garden. They've got chooks there, everything. And I think this is that once the children get a bit older, they get into sports and so on, or the parents don't have time or are not interested in encouraging them. But the younger ones, if they get that to start off with, usually it sticks with them. And the older ones, certainly, or retired people, I think that is so, so important. That's got to be encouraged.
Indeed. Indeed. So just as we wind up, how has your work contributed to the awareness of gardens and gardening, would you say, in Canberra?
Well, hopefully I've done certainly either a front garden or a back garden or the whole garden, around about 750 gardens in Canberra, mainly private gardens, plus the commercial ones, shall we say, like the Film and Sound, whatever. And most of those, the people, well, some of them, 20 years later, they've come back to me and said, Cedric, look, we're thinking of changing part of the garden. Would you just come and have a look and walk around? We don't want a plan, but just a walk around, you know, give us some advice and so on. And so, almost reluctantly, I do it now. But yes, I mean, certainly, hopefully, that I've helped in promoting gardening and through my garden talks and everything I have to do with gardening. Hopefully, it's contributed. But also, as I say, garden clubs and societies play an important role, not only just as a garden club, but lots of them come along as a social meeting, friends, like the Belconnen Garden Club. They'll have a guest speaker. They'll come to the guest speaker at 10 o'clock and he finishes at 11 o'clock or half past 11. They have morning tea. And then they go off in the club where they are. They'll all go, a little group of them will go and have lunch there and have a chat. And it's a social thing as well as just straight gardening.
Not just about knowing the botanical names, but also engaging in a conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that is so important. And our environment, I mean, we didn't mention on climate change, etc. It was only last night I was looking and I found a site there where they can assess now the climate in Canberra and trees and shrubs and so on for the last 500 years.
500?
For the last 500 years.
In Canberra?
And they can do it in Australia in the whole. They can do it through, I'll show you later, but they can do it through two things. One is trees and one is coral. And trees can tell us, as an earlier conversation I had, which we don't have time for now, but trees, say in Britain, 600, 700, 800 years old. In some olive trees we know in the south of France are 2,500 years old. And they know because they can take core samples, they know the growth rings of the trees, and they can tell when there's been dry years, when there's been wet years, when there's been droughts, etc., etc. And some of the worst droughts in the 1700s in Australia, 1797 I think it was far worse than any drought that we've had at present time. So it's been happening. And also the monks in the monasteries recorded, because they were the only ones that were writing, recorded when the peasants were starving and they were digging up earthworms to eat to survive because of a massive drought, right through to flooding rains and losing their crops through rains. And it's recorded. And it's recorded almost parallel with what the trees said and what the monks said in the monasteries.
But for Australia and Canberra, you have the rain measurements.
I had the main rain measurements since 1870. Mm. And it's very interesting in that with those records, I've got them here somewhere, they start in an official weather station at the Queanbeyan Bowling Club, 1870. And the Queanbeyan Bowling Club registered with the Bureau of Meteorology. It's a registered station that's still operating. Station number 070072, opened 1870.
Cedric, I think that's the topic of another interview.
Well, yes, but just one thing, for example, in 1902, a massive drought in these areas, a massive drought. So that it's, they say climate change, it's all happened before. So, you know, I'm a skeptic on climate change because I've examined and examined and read reports and so on, and reports from scientists in the UK and other European countries. And so on. And there's going to be droughts. Doesn't matter what we do, except if we keep increasing the population in Australia and increasing, 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 there's going to be more and more demands on our water.
Mm.
But still, I think it's important promoting, and particularly promoting the planting of trees. And one just last quick example, in Denmark, in 1865, and it must have been a fair size estate, they decided to plant 10 acres of oak trees. And they planted 10 acres of oak trees every year since 1865. And they are still planting, and the first oak trees, they one of the earliest ones, they use for timber. But like, you know, deforestation, take everything out. When they take 10 acres out, they add 10 acres in, and it covers several thousand acres.
What a gift.
And we're not doing that in Australia.
No.
We are just not planting trees.
Again, with much regret, Cedric, I think that's also another interview. But I think for today, you've been incredibly generous and patient with your time and your recollections both. So thank you for this wonderful gift to the Australian Garden History Society and for your time.
Well, I think also I appreciate their thought of doing this and recording, not only myself but some of the others, what's been happening. Like in Canberra and the Southern Tablelands and this area of gardening and what's been happening with gardening. And I congratulate them certainly on the initiative of doing this. I think that is tremendous.
Part of the history of Australian gardening. Thank you, Cedric.
Thank you, Rosalind.